Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello, everyone. This is Eleanor, executive producer for Unwell, and I'm here with a bunch of our team to chat for the evening about what it's like working in audio and making Unwell. So a couple of thoughts before we get started, and I make everybody go around and introduce themselves. I just want to say that we are going to talk pretty freely about the show with the assumption that if you are listening to this, you are at least mostly caught up on season three. So we may talk about some of the big and important things that happen in the season finale for season three. If you haven't listened to that yet, you might want to come back to this later after you have. You have been warned. Okay, great. To get us started, I just want to go around and have each of the four of you introduce yourselves so people can hear your voice and tell us who you are and what role you play on Unwell, a Midwestern Gothic mystery.
I am Joshua K. Harris, he, him, and I play Rudy.
I'm Marsha Harmon, she, her, and I play Dot Harper.
I'm Mark Soloff, he, him, and I play Silas Lodge.
I'm Ellie Maitland, she, her, and I'm the waitress.
And I'm Eleanor Hyde, she, her, executive producer. I wanted to ask you all to talk. I know you all have done stage acting as well. And I wanted you to chat a little bit about, like, how is voice acting different than acting on the stage? What do you like about it? What's that all about?
I think it's more humane to work in audio. And this is a conversation that's been going on for a lot of people, especially in the theater community here in Chicago, where we record, that we're all kind of over the way stage and theater works, possibly just in Chicago, possibly all over the U.S., maybe farther, because it's so demanding of your time for so little, well, financial reward, and sometimes very little any other reward. You know, I know once upon a time, Marsha, who it turns out I'm married to.
Spoilers!
Spoiler. That was supposed to be season five. I'm sorry.
There's a plot twist.
There was a time when she was working her full-time job and also doing a stage play at the same time, rehearsing, performing. And just every hour of every day was consumed with some form of work. And she loved the show and she likes her job, and I'm speaking for you, of course, but it was awful. And doing this, working in audio, you know, the flip side of this is it's sadly we don't see each other often enough, but also we show up 5-6 times a year to a spot and do some work and leave, and we get to, you know, see our pets and make dinner, and see people who we don't work with. It's so much more humane working in audio.
Yeah, I think it's also a couple things that I like about it more is it's like a lot of the constraints based on what type you are and what you look like, they all go out the window, you know? So, I'm playing Dawn Harper, who's 62 or 63 when the show starts, and that is not my age. And that's great. And in another Heart Life NFP audio drama that I had the honor of participating in, I got to play a character who did a lot of like really badass things, like go up elevators the hard way. And like, I'm not great at like stage combat. I can't do that kind of role on stage, but in audio drama, I can be a total badass, which is wonderful.
Thank you, sound designers.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, right.
Very much so.
And it's like, it's so much fun because in stage acting, you are always part of the final product. Like the actors are the people who execute it every night on the stage. And in audio drama, we don't get to hear the final product until everybody else does. And so we go kind of building on what you were saying, like we go put in our work and make our contribution, and then we go away and 6 months, 8 months later, we hear the final episode and we hear all the work of the designers and the editors, and like I've forgotten half of the plot points. And so I get to listen to it and wonder what's going to happen next and be kind of delighted at these surprising sound effects. And it's so much more fun to like be a part of, like contribute to the creation of something, but also be able to listen to it like as a fan.
I second Marsha's enjoyment of voice acting in that you can be anything. You can be all sorts of crazy characters. I did a secret project, which will probably never come to the light of day. I'm not
more secret than that.
Yeah, I'm not teasing you with anything. It's just like a test thing. And I got to play like this giant bruiser space alien. And that's just not my type.
For the record, though, Mark is 7'8".
Yeah, but I'm not a space alien.
Oh, okay.
And so, like, obviously, Silas Lodge, we're Caucasians. But other than that, we don't have a whole lot in common. And also, much like Dot, Silas Lodge is an older entity than I am, and just a bit. So that's awesome because in college, in acting class, they used to say, "Your face is your destiny," and I was like, "Oh, f."
Just the whole classroom cries.
But the other aspect, if I can get into emotions, is that like I personally hit a real roadblock with my live performing in Chicago like 8 years ago maybe, in that I developed stage fright and panic attacks, and like it was devastating to me because I love performing and I love playing. But there is a biological thing that happens to you when you have a room full of other human beings just looking at you. And voice work is so like liberating in that way, because you're in a room, it's mostly the cast or people that you know, and if you flub on something, you can say, "Oh, hold on, let me try that again." And it's just, for me personally, it's so much more of a safe space. I think a lot of that has to do with the people that you're working with, and this company in particular is very good at creating that. But it's really nice to be an anxious horse and still be able to run in the race.
Can I build off of that real quick? First of all, absolutely. It is such a much more supportive medium and a safe medium, especially when you have a team that is committed to those values. But also talking about playing characters you usually wouldn't get to play, that's definitely the experience I have playing Rudy. And I don't know how well this is known, but when I went in to audition for Rudy, it was the same time that Mark went into audition and Michael Turrentine went to audition. And I don't know if you read for any characters besides Silas or not. But I know I was supposed to read for both Silas and Rudy. And I thought, well, okay, Silas is probably where they'll get any serious look at me. I probably won't get Rudy. And I think Michael was reading for Rudy. And of course, as well as Wes. And so in my head, like, Silas is the role I usually would play. Just that someone older, an authority figure, maybe the heavy, that kind of thing. I don't get to usually play the higher pitched, younger end of my, vocal range, or it's the beard. Yeah. And I am 7'9". So,
rub it in. Why don't you?
And a space alien.
So getting to Rudy was an amazing opportunity to get to do that, but it's just not something I usually get to do. Mark and I were actually talking about the other day. It was just really cool to meet each other in that context, as well as Michael, and then come out the other side with Michael as Wes, myself as Rudy, and Mark as Silas. That's just what this medium affords you.
I want to jump in because I just want to say I was in that audition room, and like, audition processes are so weird because, you know, you see a lot of people and you consider a lot of options. And, you know, now years later, it's like really hard for me not to imagine anything except for exactly what happened. But I will say there were a couple of people where I remember Jeffrey and I talking about it and being like, well, I mean, duh, that's clearly the right person for this. And Josh, both you and Mark were people who were like, oh, that's done. We don't need to. I mean, we're
Mark had an amazing read.
Like, it was like, well, we're done with that one. All right. We don't need to talk to. I mean, I guess we should read some other people. But like, so it's sort of funny being on the other side of that and being like, I mean, that wasn't my experience. But like, I, you know, of course not. We're different people.
Yeah, I don't have a lot new to contribute to the equation. It's a very freeing medium. It's very exciting to have, I guess, more agency over your headcanon in relation to the characters that you're playing, and also feel like you're not confined by whatever it is you're going to be presenting on stage and being like, well, audience, this is what you better have in your head because it's what you get. and the experiences that I've had with a couple of Heart Life productions at this point of very disparate characters that I wouldn't normally necessarily get to play in a stage context is really cool. You still get the community aspect of getting to collaborate with your other peers in your scenes. One of the things I've always really enjoyed about Heart Life is recording with the other actors in your scenes when you can, because I feel like that really makes a big difference in the ultimate creative output, like when people are really organically reacting off of each other. But still, you do have those other opportunities to be like, I want to try that again. I want to take a different take on that. And just getting all those out in a way that would also not necessarily work in a stage context. You can't say to the audience, oh, I'm going to try that again. We're cool, right?
I also had like an adjustment period when I first started doing any kind of recording acting. You know, because there is that great organic feeling of like being in the room with the actors and kind of playing around. But in a rehearsal for a stage play, you can overlap with the person that you're talking to. And you can like turn your pages whenever you want. And so I remember like my first couple of rehearsals and recording sessions back in the Our Fair City days, I had a lot of like, oh, I have to like learn these new kind of technical protocols. And I mean, not that that was, I mean, it was just like a challenge and I figured it out and it's fine. But it's like the sort of this extra layer of consideration. And there's also a kind of like, it requires or it relies on a trust in the editing team, because sometimes there's like lines that break over a page or like a conversation that relies on this really quick back and forth. And I know I don't want to step on their line, so I'm giving it a little more air than I would if this were a live performance. But I know that when they go to actually make the final cut, they're gonna get those lines right on top of each other or overlap them or whatever it is. And so that's just an interesting like added layer of stuff to think about with the audio.
Another one of the things, if I can add on to that, is when you're in the room with your collaborators and you're seeing them react to other people's work, and that can just be really, really fun and rewarding. Like there are folks that I've just seen them reacting in real time to other parts of the story that maybe they weren't familiar with or they hadn't read or impressed on them during like earlier table reads. And it's just really cool to see that unfolding, kind of like you're not only your peers, but also your audience and your cheerleading team. So that's cool.
If you ever have the opportunity to do a recording along with Michael Turrentine or Kat Hoyle,
yep.
You will never have a greater experience with an immediate audience in an audio work. The times Michael will cover his mouth with both hands and the way Kat will give the looks. It's amazing. Yeah. And I don't know if that's specifically who you were thinking of, but that's who comes to mind for me.
I wasn't naming names, but I was thinking them really loudly. So thank you for picking that up.
Message received.
So this is a great transition point, because one of the things I wanted to talk about was like, how did pandemic times change our recording experience? Because I agree, Ellie, I feel like one of my favorite things about our process is getting to be in the studio with everybody, right? So traditionally, how we have always set up our recording sessions is we say, on this date, we're going to record all of episode 3, or at least like 90% of episode 3. And we bring everybody who's in that episode to the studio at the same time. We read, we do a couple rehearsals, and then we record it. And, you know, in 2020, the whole world turned upside down. And we did a lot of really hard thinking about how to do recordings and still be safe. And one of the things that we ended up doing was we split up that recording schedule way more than we've ever done before. In an effort to just have fewer people in the studio at any given time. And a lot of people ended up recording by themselves. So not always, like sometimes we'd have two people like in a scene bouncing off of each other. But like a lot of times we just had one of you alone in a room together with Jeffrey as director and Mel as engineer. And like, so yeah, I'm really curious to hear you all talk about what that experience was like, just because it was really different. And it's something I think I've always thought was sort of critical to how we make the work. And then we did it different and the work was still amazing, but the process felt really different. Even if I think on the product at the finish line, like I don't think most people would know that we did that really differently. So I don't know, how was recording in 2020 in the time of the pandemic? How y'all feeling about that and heading into doing it again?
I was generally fortunate. I got to record with at least one other person, I think most of the time, if not all of the time. But I know there were several people who had to record alone for either one episode or a few lines or maybe their entire season of work. And a quick sidebar on that, that's a huge testament to Jeffrey and the editors and the sound designers for making that disparate work so seamlessly together for these incredible conversations and action scenes and things like that. But I was lucky. I got to record with some other people.
I do want to toss out there, it's not only a testament to the quality of the direction and the sound design and those teams pulling it together, but I also think it speaks very highly to the dynamics that the acting ensemble had established in previous seasons together.
Yeah, even when we weren't physically in the room anymore, like I know what Lily sounds like. I can imagine her voice in my head. And even if the final product is like a different take than I would have that I was imagining, it's still like, I know kind of what that feels like.
Yeah, it's still very much grounded in a relationship that you two had instilled from previous work together.
Yeah, yeah.
And I will say also that I was one of the actors that did only solo recording this past year. The waitress can get a little spitty. So it seemed like it might be in everyone's best interest to, you know, make it less hazmat. In a group setting. But I'll also go ahead and shoehorn in that one of the things that I also love about this crew and working with Jeffrey in particular is that they and I are also noise nerds together. We come to sound design in different ways because I'm predominantly an analog sound artist. I do live Foley for audio drama whenever I get to, and that has also been, you know, a bit of question during the sickness. But we have an established dynamic when it comes to building sound and sound's relationship to character. And one of the cool things that we got to experiment with in the waitress's scenes in this past season, because so much of it was building a sound bank of different ways that Jeffrey and the rest of the sound artists were going to be editing together the way she was intimidating other characters, spoilers, meant like a lots of like little bits and pieces. And ultimately I asked Jeffrey if they would conduct me on how to deliver certain sequences and certain phrases and lines. And I thought that was really successful. And it's also something that I've incorporated into later performances, later collaborations as a sound artist, which is actually also a bit more related to how radio drama would have been done in the vastly before times in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. It was more commonplace for radio theater directors to conduct their voice actors when they were all in a studio together. So it was kind of cool to be bringing such a contemporary and like super like high tech sound operation into something that was also kind of more like old timey in execution.
I wish everyone could have seen Ellie as she was delivering that, because she was also conducting. Like, there was the gestures were very much supporting what you were saying.
I do lots of enjoying. Hands.
No, it was great. It was great. One of the cool things that I got to experience in the sort of like, I did a couple scenes together with people, and then I think I was like, I don't know, I didn't feel great one day. And so we all decided I should just not come in. So I wound up recording a couple scenes by myself later, including the scene that had I think it was the Christmas scene that had all the singing with young Lily and, like, I don't know, middle-aged Dot. I think Symphony had already recorded her version of that scene. And so I was like looking at the script and I'm like, so I'm singing with another person. And how are we going to be singing in the same key as if we're singing together? And of course, Jeffrey had already created the solution to that problem, which was that I was listening to her recording as I was getting ready to do mine, so that like it was just in my head, and you know, it was as close to being in the same room as we could have been. But that was like, that was a fun thing. And then when I got to like actually listen to the episode, I was like, yep, there we are singing together like we were singing together.
For me, I recorded everything in the previous season in one day, just Jeffrey and myself. And I absolutely missed having the cast around and getting to kind of get back into that groove. Because as previously mentioned, like we only come in like five times a year and then it's a fallow period while the writers and editors do their thing. And also like, I don't know. So Heart Life for me has become a bit of like my community, my people. And so the pandemic was difficult because like just seeing each other is meaningful to me aside from the work. So that being said, just getting to like hang out with Jeffrey for an afternoon and talk about me and my character. I mean, it's bliss. So another, I think that recording alone for the past season, for me, there was the saving grace of Silas Lodge being this otherworldly thing. And so there's a scene where Abby is like spelunking and and finds Silas's old like writings, and the voice of the writing comes alive and tells one of those old Silas Lodge stories. And so in that regard, it's like Silas is talking to himself in a way. I mean, he's still communicating with Abby from beyond the page or whatever. But that's different than having like a Lily Dot scene where it's like, I can't believe you woke me up. Get out of my room. What are you doing? You know, Silas is prone to like mansplain his dialogue and just kind of be like, hey, shut up, campers. Let me tell you a story for the next minute or so, and then you can react to me. So that made it a little easier to record alone.
Can we do a spinoff series called Camp Silas, where Silas is a camp counselor?
Oh my God.
Hi, I'm Yusuf Dahl, and when I was 18, I was convicted of selling drugs. For the past 3 years, I've had difficulty finding housing because it is legal in the United States to discriminate against individuals that have a past drug distribution conviction on their record for life. It doesn't matter if it was a hard drug like heroin or a drug that's now legal or partially legal in many states across the country, like marijuana. The Thurman Amendment was introduced to the Fair Housing Act in 1988 by segregationist Strom Thurmond, and it's since been used to deny housing to all people. But because people of color are disproportionately jailed for drug charges, we are affected more. My goal is to overturn this amendment to start an end to housing discrimination that unfairly targets people of color. If you would like to join this movement, please visit ThurmanAmendment.org to learn more.
A message from the Fable and Folly Network.
All right, I have another question for y'all. I was recently in this conversation, I was talking to some folks about making audio fiction, and somebody in the conversation expressed this opinion that they felt as though people who come out of a stage background are really strong in audio work, because when you work on the stage, as opposed to, let's say, on film or television, in a play, you have to rely so heavily on the words that come out of your mouth. You can't assume that a given audience member is looking at your face at any given moment. You don't have close-ups. Like, there's a different way that you use language. And I'm sort of curious what you think about that, because I found it to be a striking way to think about acting and words and audio in a way that I hadn't really thought about it before. And I don't know, I'm sort of curious if any of you have a reaction to that.
I'm intrigued by the premise, because one of the first things I would think is that it's so much more common for people to have a theatrical background first, at least until this past generation, where I feel like there's going to be a lot of folks that are suddenly learning how to act expressly over camera because of the internet and because of Zoom. And so I got to wonder what that's going to do for their own, like, frame of reference and physical and vocal vocabulary when they're creating characters and also learning how what they consider to be performance. There's a longer conversation, I think, about how different, like, canonized or iconographied sound and, like, narrative structure is going to be over the next couple of decades, simply because there are so many more options at our disposal than there used to be. But my immediate reaction or association when it comes to stage in relation to audio drama would be not only that the words do so much of your work in stagecraft, but also that simply, like, having that kind of control and discipline over your apparatus for the sake of being able to project might give you a larger sense of vocabulary for what you can be doing vocally and in building not just your main character, but any other supporting or variations of characters.
Mm-hmm. I think it depends on the type of audio work they're doing and the type of character that they're playing, because I personally, as a stage actor and as a voice actor, sort of build out from the outside in, which I think is viewed as, like, the inferior way to approach acting. But I'm like, okay, what is a evil old reverend sound like? And I physically change the way I sound. but like in Our Fair City, I played a number of characters, and many of them were quite cartoonish, which I love. But if it were like a gritty true crime reenactment type thing, there's no Archibald funny pants space in that.
Not yet. No. Is there?
Archie goes off the rails. But you know, to bring it back to Our Fair City, there is an actor, Whitney Jones, who I had never heard do audio work before. And I believe she was mostly film prior to that. And she played Sully, who was like the aunt queen. And her performance, she was just basically using her own voice, her own speaking voice. And her performance was so subtle and so real that I was like blown away by it. So I think that it depends on the type of picture you're painting.
I think it's true. I think also, first of all, to underline a point I think has already been made, that if all you know is film or some other medium where your words are only some small part of the overall story being told in the moment, maybe it is harder to adapt to this. But I also don't think that theater is exclusively the thing that prepares you well for this. I think there's a certain commonality that runs through everybody who works on Unwell, and it is shared by a lot of other performers, where you grow up really enjoying a certain show or series or performer or whatever it may be, and you really try to emulate that. Like as a kid, I know I would, when no one was looking, you know, go into the bathroom and like try to do my Simpsons impressions in the mirror. Or try to do things like that, like "Hiya, Homer," and you try to be Mo or whatever it is, and you try these different vocal expressions, and you try to without trying to necessarily, you end up working on your enunciation and all these little technical skills that I really don't like to get into the weeds on. But there's something to be said for a lot of different avenues to come to audio work. Yes, a lot of us have gone through stage work. And that certainly is one way to do it. I mean, so with stage work, you are, and this maybe speaks a little to Mark's experience. I know it's been somewhat true of me. There's times you go out there and it's terrifying because it is just you in that moment that, and everything sinks or swims based on what you're doing. And through that trial by fire, you learn a few things. Hopefully the world doesn't chew you up and spit you out the way it often does so many people. I'm keeping it light. but yeah, I think there's a lot of ways to come to being well-skilled for audio work, at least as a performer.
I think as a stage actor, I've always been very language-focused. Like, my strength as an actor has been, I would say language first, emotions second, and like physicality later in the list, you know, like, and on stage, you have to be doing all of the things at once because you never know where people are looking. You're always there. You're always present. You're always in character. But in some ways it like that made the transition easier because it was like, oh great. Here's this whole section of things I don't have to think about for this performance. All I have to do is,
excuse me.
Oh, kitty.
So mournful, right?
So in audio acting, there's like this whole slate of things that you don't have to worry about. And so all I have to really do is worry about like saying the words and being present in the scene that way. And it does often happen that like I find myself giving like facial expression reactions to things that I know are never going to read, you know? And that's just what happens. You know, if it needs a reaction, the writers are going to write something to be said, or they're going to punctuate it with a door slam or something. But it's for me, it kind of allows me to use my favorite tools in the actor toolbox.
I'd also wonder if, like vocal, like musical technique informs anything. Cause I know you've got a beautiful singing voice and I don't know if you're like classically trained or anything, but
I did do some, like classical voice lessons. And it's funny because I feel like I don't generally put it to very good use. And in some ways like audio drama lets me really, cause you're not projecting to a room of 200 people or 50 people or a room that seats 200 and holds 50, sometimes happens in Chicago non-equity theater. In some ways I feel like it, I don't want to say lazy, but like you don't have to do some of the things that you have to do in live performance. And also, I think there are some things that you should do in live performance that you can't do, like the kind of enunciation that I would do for a mid-sized audience with those like consonants and those plosive consonants. Like you don't need to do that in audio drama. Like that somebody else takes care of that. So that's, we watched the first episode of Only Murders in the Building, and they start to make a podcast. So I don't want to, like, I'm not going to, no spoilers about the show, cause it's really delightful and highly recommend. But at one point near the end of the first episode, they're recording some like voiceover for the episode and you realize it's some audio that you heard earlier, and that's all I'll say. But you watch the Steve Martin character enunciate for the radio, and he leans in, and his his consonants are very clear, but they're not very hard. But you can see him finish each word gets its own ending, and you can sort of see him really enjoying it. And I just ate it up.
I would say this is actually, if I can be super self-absorbed and actually brag on Marcia for a second. There's something about a performer's personality that I think affects how well they work in audio. And what I mean in this case is Marcia is given to and really enjoys works that are very much about the language. Things that are, you know, like you did a G.K. Chesterton show and Tom Stoppard, and
written by Bilal Dardai.
Bilal Dardai, by the way, mm-hmm. adapted by Bilal Dardai. Brilliantly, Bilal Dardai. If I may add. And a lot of just like British writers and, you know, things that really want the performers to wrap their mouths around the words and, you know, make sweet love to them. And Marcia, in that way, is a wonderful lover. And if that take can't be used, Marcia really enjoys the power of words and what you can do with words, and just finding what your own instrument can do with words. And it's that kind of thing where we watch a lot of British television. She will often repeat something that someone on the screen has said so she can enjoy that Northern dialect or whatever it is in the moment.
It's a super endearing habit. Everyone should pick it up.
It's not to the point of like frustration, but it's an interesting character quirk. I love you. But it's that kind of thing. It's that kind of proclivity that I think prepares Marcia well and makes her well suited for audio work. And while I know that, of course, about Marcia, I think that's going to be true for a lot of people who work on this show. For Michael or for Mark, for, I don't know everybody's individual stories, but
I mean, my understanding, Mark, is that when you first got involved with HeartLife, that you just came in and were like, I just want to make monster noises all the time.
Yeah, I still do.
Well, I'm so glad we can give you a space for that because you're so good at it.
Thank you. Yeah, I remember. So HeartLife started with Jeffrey and Clayton Fates and a group of people who generally were connected to the Museum of Science and Industry, all working as Harry Potter, the exhibition wizards for a summer. And I remember a bunch of them were doing Our Fair City, and I was late to the game. Like I didn't learn about it or something. And I remember feeling like, all the cool kids are doing this fun sci-fi podcast. Don't they know that I do improv and stuff? And so like, I was like, guys, if you have any, like, I could do like monster sounds. I have like weird alien I could do. I think Clayton was probably like, okay, kid, cool.
As he stepped into his limo.
Yeah. Eventually I insinuated myself into the cast and have loved it ever since.
That's so funny. Yeah, I always thought of you as one of the like OG OFC people.
I didn't OG until season two.
Okay.
As Simon.
Okay. Yeah.
Before we move on too far, I want to get back to someone's Simpsons impressions and see if any of those have informed character choices you've made.
Oh, gosh. Well, I haven't done them in years. And like, I think a lot of, like a lot of white American cis men of a certain age, you know, I was steeped in The Simpsons to the point of thinking it was a personality. and so I've actually, you know, left some of that behind as I think as we culturally have learned some of the problematic nature of the symptoms, but symptoms? Simpsons. No, I haven't done them in a long time, but yeah, Mo is one I remember trying to do a lot, or Homer, or I don't know who all. I didn't bring it to this, and that's interesting, actually, a thing about Rudy is that if you had asked me farther back in my acting career that you're eventually going to get this opportunity to do this audio drama, and you're going to play a character that's a little outside the usual bubble of what you play, what are you going to do? And I would have said, oh, it's going to sound like this character and this wacky thing and blah, blah, blah. And the only thing I really did with Rudy, it was just like, I felt compelled or almost obligated to use the higher part of my register and then just otherwise be excited. and in the end, Rudy has ended up more or less just my own speaking voice.
Yeah, I've always sort of felt like Rudy is just you with the enthusiasm meter cranked up like an extra 30%.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. That's how it's always read to me.
No, Rudy's exhausting.
Legit.
Yeah.
Thanks, y'all. This was really fun. I love hanging out with you and chatting with you. And, you know, we haven't had as many opportunities to do it. So thank you. And thanks to everybody out there listening. We're excited to share these stories with you.
The Fable and Folly Network. Where fiction producers flourish.
Space Podity.
An actual play D&D Spelljammer podcast. In Space Podity, 4 adventurers visit the worlds and vex the GMs of other actual play shows. Keep listening for a sneak peek and please subscribe so you don't miss the first episodes set in the campaign of the long-running Dungeons & Dragons podcast.
Acting Captain's Log. We've crashed our flying birdbath mansion. Long story. The party of groundling adventurers on board is kind and heroic, but untrusting, and is staring at me. It consists of a traumatized minotaur.
You want to see traumatized?
A spooky Asimar child.
I'm an adult now.
An adult Asimar child, whom I suspect to be enthralled by a hidden power, and the most headstrong elf I have ever met, and that includes Rascalgar the Cataclysmically Reckless from the former Orogenon Zed.
Sounds fun.
Also, the mansion's kitchens are out of ale.
How am I going to function?
Space Podity. Find us wherever your podcasts are.